Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. One thing's for sure, apples are the second most popular fresh fruit in the United States. By the bushel or the peck, apples in season are a tasty snack packed with nutrients. We'll learn about the benefits of apples from dietitian Joan Rogas later on in the show.
But first, there's nothing cool or hip about being ill. But if any medical condition could be identified as trendy, judging from the number of individuals who say they suffer symptoms with or without a doctor's diagnosis, it would be gluten intolerance. It's been blamed for nearly everything from autism and arthritis to sinus problems and migraines.
All this hype masks the very real problem of celiac disease, an autoimmune disorder that is diagnosed through a blood test and biopsy. Over 300 symptoms and complications may result from untreated celiac disease, including cancer. The elapsed time from onset of symptoms to diagnosis averages about 10 years. Joining us to discuss celiac disease are two nationally recognized experts. Dr. Daniel Leffler is Director of Clinical Research at the Celiac Center at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Nancy Lapide is managing editor for Reuters Health and formerly managed the celiac disease website for About.com, a division of the New York Times Company. Nancy herself was diagnosed with celiac disease in 1999. I'd like to welcome both of you to Take Care.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Nancy, why don't we start with you? You got a diagnosis of celiac disease some years ago. But from what I understand, during your childhood, you felt crummy. You knew something was off. You had different kinds of tests done through the years, but you didn't get a diagnosis for many years. Share your story and experience with us.
Well, I was, as a baby and a young child, I was actually fine. I was a big kid. I was tall for my age. I grew normally. And when I became an adolescent, I started to become anemic. At every blood test, I was anemic. And I was having a lot of extensive dental work at the time. And people said, oh, it's because you're not eating enough. You know, eat more. The anemia will go away. And I had chronic mouth sores. And I had chronic sinus infections. And I had chronic sort of stomach aches. I couldn't eat. I had no appetite. And I became very thin. And as a young adult in my 20s and even in my 30s, I was just gaunt. I was just so underweight. And everyone said, oh, you don't eat enough. And my father had been very underweight also. And we thought, okay, you're just like your father, you know. And I just was kind of rambled on that way. I was just so, so thin. I couldn't keep weight on. And in fact, I was working at the time with a lot of physicians, and I used to say to them, somebody should take my blood and store it because someday they're going to figure out that I have some kind of malabsorption problem, that I'm just not absorbing the food. And then it turned out that I have celiac disease, which is a malabsorption problem. The nutrients don't get absorbed from your intestine, but I found out by accident because I had an ulcer. And when I had an upper GI endoscopy, the doctor, the gastroenterologist, discovered that I had an ulcer. He took biopsies of my stomach and small intestine to look for a bacteria, H. pylori, that's often found in people with ulcers. And fortunately for me, the pathologist who looked at the biopsy samples came back and said she doesn't have H. pylori, but she has celiac disease. So I found out by accident. And it really changed my life. And in fact, the doctor at the time, and this was like 1999, when I think many doctors at the time thought that celiac disease was something that happened in children. They weren't really realizing that.
They weren't looking for it in adults. Okay, so what you're saying is all these years you've presented with these problems, but you never got a diagnosis that reflected what was truly going on.
That's correct.
So how did you feel about that? Because obviously you still continue to suffer, and yet you're not getting specific answers.
Well, you know, I didn't know that there was anything. It was sort of this low-grade suffering. You know, I was anemic. I was tired. I didn't have a big appetite. But I had these chronic infections. I even had shingles as sort of a young person, which is kind of unusual. And we all just thought, okay, you're like your father. He had those kinds of problems too, you know. I don't think anybody – I just sort of moved along living my life. I wasn't critically ill, so I just dealt with it. But when I found out that I had celiac disease, a lot of all of these little clues sort of fell into place. It made sense.
In retrospect, once you had the diagnosis. So Dr. Leffler, let's bring you in at this point. How typical is Nancy's story? Do most patients wait, you know, that many years? What's your experience?
So unfortunately, Nancy's story is quite typical. Everyone, celiac disease is a highly diverse condition and people present in all different ways. But almost no matter what the presentation is, the vast majority of people are waiting years or decades between the onset of symptoms, the onset of likely disease, and getting a diagnosis. And it isn't because they're not talking to their doctors about it. It's because celiac disease just hasn't been on the radar of American physicians in historically.
I just want you to explain to us, what is celiac disease? I mean, we're not a medical audience, but we've heard the term. Why don't you describe the process of the disease and how it presents?
Sure. Always good to start with a good foundation. So celiac disease is an autoimmune disorder. I think that's the first thing that's important. It's not an intolerance. It's not an allergy. It's actually much closer to a disease like type 1 diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis or lupus than it is to lactose intolerance or something like that. What happens in celiac disease is actually fascinating and quite well understood. In people with celiac disease, gluten, which is one of the main proteins that's found in wheat and related grains, such as rye and barley, this is able to trigger a reaction where the body starts to attack itself. The body attacks itself in many ways. It attacks the lining of the intestine. That's where the disease starts. It originates from, and that's where a lot of the manifestations of celiac disease arise due to that damage of the intestine and the malabsorption that Nancy was talking about. And this is why anemia and gastrointestinal symptoms are very common in celiac disease. But you also produce antibodies. Those are sort of immune proteins that help to fight off infection usually. But in this case, they actually target your own parts of proteins, your own part of the bodies, and they can attack almost any part of your body. And that's why people with celiac disease can get rashes. They can get neurologic abnormalities, problems in the brain. They can have bone problems. Really, almost any organ can be affected by celiac disease, although it is all triggered by this reaction, this abnormal reaction of gluten with the immune system in the intestine.
How is it diagnosed?
So we've come a long way with celiac diagnosis in the last 10 or 15 years. In the past, really, we were limited to only, you know, going back to the early 80s. And before, really, all we had was intestinal biopsy. And even that wasn't very easy to do because that was in the 70s. That was before the era of easy, flexible endoscopy the way we do now. So there was good reason why in the 1970s, not a lot of people were thinking about and diagnosing celiac disease. We really don't have good excuses for why it's not being thought about now. Now we have very, very good blood tests that are 95% accurate for diagnosing or excluding celiac disease. Again, just with a simple blood test. They're not perfect, though, and I think that's a point that's good to make. These are very, very good blood tests. They have transformed the way we evaluate and diagnose celiac disease, but they're not 100%, and there are reasons for false positives and there are reasons for false negatives. And so that is why we still do rely on endoscopy with biopsy of the intestine, the area where celiac disease is most active, as the gold standard for diagnosis. This is a lifelong condition that has multiple morbidities associated with it, so we really try to avoid errors in diagnosis whenever possible.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation of health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We're talking about celiac disease, and our guest today, Dr. Leffler, who we're just talking to, who is the Director of Clinical Research at the Celiac Center at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, also joining us today, Nancy Lepage. She's Managing Editor for Reuters Health, but she's joining us for the discussion on celiac because she herself was diagnosed with celiac after going through quite a bit during her childhood with unexplained symptoms that she then came to find out was celiac disease. We're talking about how it's diagnosed and the blood test, as you're saying, researchers are working on increasing the accuracy, but at 95%, that's pretty good. Why would somebody have a false positive if they didn't have celiac?
So there are a couple reasons that are common for false positives in that small minority. The first is actually transient infections of the gastrointestinal tract. We see this is very well documented in children. If children get a gastroenteritis, they get some GI symptoms, they just get a lot of inflammation in the intestine. And this can lead to antibodies that are not identical to the celiac antibodies, but cross-react with the way we test them. So children and even adults after GI infections can have positive blood tests. Again, these will usually normalize over time. But again, if you just do a single test and rely on that for a diagnosis, you could be living with a diagnosis of celiac disease for the rest of your life based on a transient gastrointestinal infection. Also, people with blood disorders, again, which are pretty common as people get older, the immune system starts to act a little funny, produce antibodies that may not be completely normal anyway. And these can be sticky in some ways, and they can cause false positives. So those are sort of the two most common scenarios. And sometimes it's obvious when things don't fit together, but sometimes it can be really tricky to piece out which of these are real diagnoses and which are not.
Dr. Leffler, only a small number of those with celiac disease are diagnosed. So how many people are walking around with undiagnosed celiac disease? Do you have a number?
Yeah, so we have some good ideas about that, which have come out of some recent studies, a lot of them out of the Mayo Clinic, which have shown that celiac disease in America, like most of Europe and a lot of other countries, affects about 1% of the general population. So we would expect about 3 million people with celiac disease to have celiac disease in the United States. Of those, only about 15% are currently diagnosed, so around 400,000. So the vast majority of people with celiac disease have not been diagnosed. The other, 2.5 million of the 3 million have not been diagnosed. So really, we have not even begun to diagnose the majority of people with celiac disease. And this is really an issue because we know there's substantial morbidity associated. There's long-term complications, not just the quality of life issues that Nancy expressed so fluently that a lot of people come in with, saying, with really remorse about decades of life spent having various degrees of symptoms that could have been treated so effectively. But there's also long-term issues, increased risks of some cancers, increased risk of osteoporosis, things that really aren't so easy to get over once you have been diagnosed. And so there's a real concern that there is a significant public health impact to missing all these diagnoses.
So how up-to-date is the general medical community about celiac disease?
So it's improving. We're certainly in a different place than we were a decade ago. At the same time, I think celiac disease has been well established in gastroenterology, in endocrinology, in hematology, places that typically refer and find people with complications of celiac disease, such as anemia and the like. The place where there is still a lot of uncertainty is primary care. And they are really, like so many other things, gatekeepers of this. And, the celiac blood testing is cheap and available in every place in the United States, and it's just as dramatically underused by primary care physicians. It's very easy to give people a diagnosis of irritable bowel syndrome, to blame anemia on menstruation or something else, and not do that next step and say, well, could this be malabsorption? Could this be celiac disease? And that's really where the big lapse is. And in other countries, Finland's a great example, where it's just a routine test for primary care physicians. They've diagnosed about 75% of their celiac population, again, compared to our 15%. Really, that's where the issue is. It's primary care awareness of celiac disease.
I was going to ask you if you thought this should be a a routine blood test for people having annual blood work, or just for those that are coming in with GI symptoms or the other symptoms you mentioned.
So, we are very worried about the 85% of people who don't get diagnosed. At the same time, once you institute national screening programs, you're changing the equation a little bit, not just with the economics, but potentially with the diagnosis of people. Of those 85%, not all of them are going to be symptomatic. Not all of them are going to be significantly ill. Not all of them may be at risk for the complications that somebody we know with symptomatic celiac disease and significant malabsorption is. So there are a lot of concerns regarding sort of using it as a general screening test. What I don't think there are any concerns or it is any controversy is really having a very low threshold to test for celiac disease in people who are coming in reporting GI symptoms, rashes, fatigue, nutritional deficiencies, just things that don't fit well with how they used to be feeling, how they feel like they should be feeling. In terms of screening general population, we're not sure, but in terms of testing much more widely for people with symptoms, it's clearly what we should be doing.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And for our discussion of celiac disease today, we're talking with Dr. Daniel Leffler, a gastroenterologist on the faculty of Harvard Medical School, and Nancy Lapid, managing editor for Reuters Health, who is herself someone who deals with celiac disease. Dr. Leffler, let's talk about the treatment, and then after he explains that, Nancy, I want to pull you in on how that treatment works for somebody who's newly diagnosed. What is the treatment for celiac disease?
So the only treatment currently for celiac disease is strict adherence to a gluten-free diet. And that's good and bad. Nancy can speak to this from her personal experience. The good thing is really that it is a dietary treatment that results in complete healing and resolution of symptoms in the majority of patients with celiac disease. The problems are that it's hard, and I'll let Nancy talk more about some of the adaptation that needs to occur to living gluten-free. But the other problem is that it takes a long time for people to heal, especially in adulthood. It can take years for complete healing to occur, if it ever does. And accidental exposures can lead to a lot of persistent symptoms. So it's a hard diet. It really requires a great deal of attention and diligence, and also is, even in those best case scenarios, often takes a frustratingly long time for people to really feel back to normal again.
But for someone who has been told that they can achieve complete healing, I think for anybody who deals with a chronic condition, that is a wonderful thing, although the road is long, as you mentioned. Nancy, you used to manage the About.com celiac disease website, and I know in your biography there, you talk about when you got the diagnosis, and you literally sat there and thought, I can't have pizza. What am I going to do? Which sounds funny, but, you know, so many of us can understand. If you were aware that you had to give up your favorite things. How was it for you to embark on this path?
Well, it was very difficult. And I was a single woman. I wasn't dating anybody, you know, and I sat there and I thought, how am I going to go on a date? You know, I can't even go get a donut anywhere. And there were very few sort of mainstream gluten-free options back then. And even today, when there are more gluten-free options, it's still very challenging. And I think I would say to anybody out there, the first year is the hardest. There are a lot of resources. I would urge people to to confide in their friends. I actually bought gluten-free cookbooks or guides to, like, the gluten-free diet, and I gave one to my sister-in-law and one to my friend my close friend, one to my cousin, the people who I knew I liked to visit. I made sure, you know, I tried to inform them. But I would urge people to join support groups, either at a local hospital or online if there's nothing nearby. About.com has the celiac site has a forum for people. There are celiac groups on Facebook, and Twitter is actually a great resource, but don't do it alone.
But the reality is gluten is hidden in so many products. I mean, Lorraine read some of these. Lorraine has a long list, and I was stunned to read some of these.
Well, Nancy, you know as well as I do, there are certain things like maybe mustards or soups or sauces or certain types of chocolate that may have gluten. You wouldn't even think to look at that.
You really have to become a detective, and I know much more about the sort of the physics and the chemistry of food now than I did before. And that's why it's so difficult in the beginning when you're reading all the labels and trying to figure out what's safe and what's not safe. And it's possible to do, and people feel much better. And I think it's harder for kids. If you have a child and you want to send the child off to a birthday party, you have to make sure that the kids, the parents of the birthday party kid, kind of know how to take care of your child. I think, and going when kids go to college, they want to be able to go out with their friends and not have to worry. And it's very fortunate that there are so many more mainstream options now. But it's a challenge. But you feel so much better afterwards. I mean, for me, it was definitely worth it. After I was diagnosed, I had a bone density test. And I had low bone density from all the years of not absorbing the calcium. And actually, over the next couple of years, I'm solidly into middle age, you know, the era when women lose bone density. And mine has actually increased with every test every couple of years. because I'm absorbing the food. And so it's worth – the diet is definitely worth the trouble, but it's not easy in the beginning. I would also say that I'm fortunate to live in a big metropolitan area where there are a lot of options. And I think in some parts of the country where people are sort of confined to fast food places, it's much harder for them.
Nancy Lapid is managing editor for Reuters Health. She herself has celiac disease and shared her experience and story with us. And we appreciate your joining us today, Nancy. Thank you so much. And Dr. Daniel Leffler, thanks to you also. It's good to finally have a discussion about celiac disease. It's certainly helpful to get the information. So thanks to both of you for being on Take Care.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Dr. Daniel Leffler is Director of Clinical Research at the Celiac Center at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Nancy Lapid is Managing Editor for Reuters Health and lives with celiac disease. For more information on celiac disease, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org/takecare. Podcasts of our show are available on iTunes and the WRVO website.
Coming up, how do you like them apples? We'll give you plenty of reasons to enjoy the benefits of apples with registered dietitian Joan Rogus. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.